This is Women's Health Today, about women for everyone. How does being a woman or a man impact your health? Does health and other policy adequately address systemic problems and root causes of ill health? Women's Health Today looks at health from an interdisciplinary and woman-centered perspective, examining the many biological, psychological, environmental, and social factors affecting health. I'm your host, Giovanna Rossi. Today on the show, we're talking about family health and wellness. What does it take for a family to be healthy and able to thrive? More women than men in New Mexico live in poverty, and the poverty rate for female-headed families with children under 5 is over 50%. A child today is as likely to have a working mother as a working father. When it costs a family of 3 in Albuquerque $37,000 to pay for housing, food, childcare, healthcare, and transportation, yet 51.6% of female-headed families live under the federal poverty level, how do families make it? What are the best ideas to eliminate poverty and improve well-being, and how do we make them work in New Mexico? Who are the partners needed to make changes? Here to discuss this and explore possible solutions are my guests, Jessica Aranda, the program director with Southwest Creations Collaborative, Adrienne Barboa, the director of Strong Families, and Kelsey Heilman, a staff attorney at the Center on Law and Poverty. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Thank you.
So I used a basic family budget calculator from New Mexico Voices for Children's website. You've probably all seen it. And for Albuquerque, for a single parent with 2 children, the annual income needed to cover rent, food, childcare, transportation, health care, and taxes is $37,080. But over half of single moms in Albuquerque and in New Mexico are living in poverty. So this begs the question, what are the causes of this disparity? And Adrienne, I wanted to start with you and just get your thoughts on these statistics.
Well, so I think that it's really important just to think about, New Mexico in general and the disparities, how the economy looks, how basically what that means for all the ways that health disparities and all the sort of things that trouble any community really look in a community like New Mexico where, you know, we're one of the poorest states in the nation. I think that really the ways that when you ask, like, how do families make it, I definitely think that families in New Mexico are consistently innovative in the way that they build community, in the way that they not only survive but thrive in times of hardship, whether that be through helping each other out, different kind of family systems, and, sort of building their own kind of economy through trade or food or sharing responsibilities. And it definitely takes its toll on how youth in particularly can thrive in education and what it looks like for them.
Okay, and Kelsey, I know you work at the Center on Law and Poverty on a lot of these numbers and analyzing this sort of information. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, one problem with the disparity between that statistic about how many families live below the poverty line and the basic family budget calculator is that the federal poverty level isn't a very good indicator of how much money you need to make ends meet. And that's a historical problem. It used to be a good indicator. And since then, the percentage of household income that has to be spent on things like rent and food has changed. Some things have gotten a lot more expensive. And so when we talk about families living below the poverty line, we're talking about very low-income families, families who don't have anywhere close to the amount of money that they need to pay for basic family necessities. And you're getting closer to the amount that you need if you are at double or triple the poverty line, just to cover those basic family necessities.
Okay, and Jessica, at Southwest Creations Collaborative, you employ women to work in the manufacturing business. Can you talk about how that contributes to maybe solving some of the issues of single moms living in poverty and not having enough money to make ends meet?
Yeah, I guess particularly in this economy, We've seen not only single mothers as kind of the main breadwinner in their house, but also as many industries like the construction trade, trades diminished. We also see women who are in a relationship with a man, married, as also the single breadwinner in their household. So we're not just talking about, as Adrienne talked about, different models of families. We're talking about even in the traditional model of families, we're seeing the role of women really, you know, increasing in terms of bringing home the bacon for their family. And so at Southwest Creations, our theory of change is that if you give a woman an opportunity, particularly an economic opportunity like a job, she'll spend the income that she makes on her children first. And so it's really an investment in women is an investment in families. And to kind of get back at your question of how families are making it, I think Adrienne's right. You know, families are being creative in the ways that they figure out how to spread out their resources. But if we look at other indicators in terms of hunger and education, our families in New Mexico aren't making it. Children are going to bed hungry at night, and only 63% of our of all students in New Mexico are graduating from high school. And so I think one of the things that we really need to look at when we're looking at the health of families, when we're looking at the health of children and of women, is what is all of our role in contributing to education, employment, food security for our women. And so at Southwest Creations, we have a holistic family-centered model where we provide jobs in contract manufacturing to women, but also a series of programs, including on-site childcare, a college bridge program, parent engagement program. So we're not just looking at the issues today, maybe poverty and dealing with those, but we're looking at the next generation of these families as well and making sure that they have access to quality education, and then a college education, so that the next generation doesn't have to necessarily work in a factory.
So this is Kelsey. I think it's useful, too, to put in perspective what these numbers kind of mean. So when we talk about families who are living between 100% and 200% of the federal poverty level, we're talking about between $9 an hour and $18 an hour for a single mom with two kids. So to be at the point where you actually could afford those basic necessities, we are talking about a college education or you know, a job that's going to allow you to make over $18 an hour. So I think a lot of people think that people living in poverty are not people who are making wages that sound sort of like familiar numbers like that. But you need a very high hourly wage compared to what most people make in New Mexico to be able to match up with those budget numbers that you were talking about.
Okay. And Adrienne, when you said your families are innovative and help each other, give me some examples of the families you work with and the kinds of things that are happening.
So Through Strong Families New Mexico, our task really is to work with groups that are doing work on the ground, working with families in community throughout the state. So like in northern New Mexico, we see that some community groups are providing, like Tewa Women United, are providing resources for families to often deal with the trauma, and historical trauma, and just trauma from living in harsh economic times, and how they do the same kind of things, bring families in, bring skills and bring the attributes of the communities there together, and also connect. They really have a model that's cross-generational that looks to reclaim how elders are connecting with youth and how they build that for each other. They have lots of, they have a whole community garden project, and how they're distributing those, how they're teaching people to reteaching people, right, to garden and build community in that sense. Definitely groups here in New Mexico, so we definitely are looking from a perspective of how we look at the policies that impact families and that hurt that may hurt families, right? So a lot of the numbers we've talked about are the ways in which the federal government looks at what the access that we have here often and becomes, like, even education, a lot of what Jessica was talking about, becomes the political wedge that is across the line fought between, and no real solutions are able to be made because it becomes the ways in which people pull political power and often use our families as the basis for that. So maybe sometimes pitting one type of family against each other, like often immigrant families are under attack or queer families are under attack. And then that pulls away from the pieces that really need to get dealt with, like really investing in how we're building education or jobs for our communities. So with Strong Families New Mexico, we're really trying to look at how we insert a dialogue that's different amongst each other and in the media around how it really displays what our families look like, sort of bringing the humanity and recognition that these are our families and, you know, we can't continue to be wedging against each other and used as almost like a political tool.
Okay.
I think one very concrete issue that we're looking at in terms of the growth and the families thriving in New Mexico is childcare. So if we look at, you know, the fact that women need to be in the workforce in order for, you know, families to thrive economically, what do they do during the day or during the evening or whatever time they're working with their children? And I think the answer right now is, you know, two things are happening in New Mexico. Either women are not able to be in the workforce because they don't have a place to, you know, send their children while they're working, or they're leaving them home alone or with another child or somebody else who isn't necessarily a quality child care provider. And so at Southwest Creations, our model here in the United States seems innovative, but if you go to India or Bangladesh or many of the places around the world that employ vast numbers of women, you know, on-site childcare is a necessity. And so we provide childcare for our families at 25 cents an hour. And the concept there is to provide childcare so women can participate in the workforce, but also in a way that they're not investing their whole salary into childcare, which is one of the main reasons why, you know, some women can't be in the workforce, because whatever they're making in their job, they're just putting right back into a, you know, a childcare provider. So in that way, you know, families are investing in other parts, maybe education, housing. Many of our women have been able to buy a home because they're not spending vast amounts of their income on childcare.
Okay, and this brings up a great issue, which is, you know, in New Mexico in 2010, about 60% of children under six had all parents in the workforce. So whether they had both, you know, parents at home or just one, all of them were working. And that's a huge number. And so the question is, have employers made efforts to accommodate the family responsibilities of today's workforce? And Jessica, your company is clearly working on that. But do you see that happening in other areas?
This is Kelsey. I mean, I think there are a couple questions here. One, are employers making those adjustments? I think the answer is generally no. And then two, what are we doing as a community through the government to commit to supporting families who need that child care assistance? So New Mexico actually for many, many years offered child care assistance to families up to 200% of the poverty level. So that single mom making $18 an hour could get help to pay the almost $1,000 a month it costs her to keep two kids in child care. And that was cut. And now you have to be at 100% of the poverty level or below to enroll in child care assistance. So you have to be making $9 an hour or less, and you get right back around to that problem where every dollar you make is going back to your child care provider. So we really need to, I think, ask our policymakers to recommit to supporting families and supporting women in their careers by giving them the child care assistance that they need before their kids are school age.
I think that that really makes me, this is Adrienne, think of sort of the ways in which our families are framed, right? I was one of the single moms actually that had my child care cut when that whole thing happened. And I remember just being devastated in the office where I went to recertify for my child care assistance. And the woman just sort of, I couldn't help, she basically told me that day, I totally thought I was going to go in, get recertified, and still have child care assistance. I think I was making $10 an hour at the time. And when she told me, I just broke. I literally started crying in front of her. And I remember she practically started crying too, because her hands were tied. There wasn't really anything she could do about it. But I think the ways in which in general in society our families, that it's an example of the way our families are framed, right? So like people are made to think that somehow, you know, providing child care assistance for women is this huge drain on our economy, and that then there's this stigma around anyone who receives child care assistance or Medicaid for their children when, you know, if we keep continue to think of these women as welfare moms or this drain on our economy, that's this burden on our society, if we don't really shift that frame and start to think about how these families and how these future generations are going to make it when their children are at home or these women can't work or need to deal with, like Jessica was saying, putting their child in a situation where it's not really quality childcare during the time that she has to work, then we're going to continue. So we really have to look at the way, not only, yes, we have to address policymakers, but we can only do that if the majority of families living in New Mexico really believe that that's the kind of support that we have to provide to women and families.
I think also if you care nothing about women and families, you know, you might care about the economy of our state and our economy. And so these women are not just mothers and whatnot. They're also employees. And, you know, if you look at our model at Southwest Creations, I think one thing that we have seen as a result of making sure that that need for childcare is provided for is just a really high level of productivity. We don't have, we have, you know, an assembly line that is very time sensitive. We run a production facility, so we can't have people coming in and off of the floor being distracted by whatever's going on. And so, you know, being productive is really important to us as an employer. And, you know, having that need met, making sure that the education needs and the health needs of families are met. Really, we don't have turnover at Southwest Creations. We have a high level of productivity. So I think, you know, if we look at the economy and the types of workers that we're, you know, looking to provide for, that's also something that's important. And I want to also clarify that, you know, as an employer, you don't just have to provide on-site childcare. That's not a reality for some employers, but there's other ways that you can make sure that that need is met. Flexibility and job sharing is a definite way that a lot of parents make that childcare, meet that childcare need in their own families. So there's a lot of creative ways where employers, if they're not necessarily in the business of improving the lives of women and families, that's not necessarily kind of their mission. Their mission is their bottom line. They can really improve that bottom line piece by doing something that's, you know, makes a lot of sense. And like I said, in India, Bangladesh, it's a reality that they have met based on their need for workers to be present and productive.
It's interesting because when you look at the companies in the U.S. that are using family-friendly policies and offering those to their employees, a lot of them are accounting firms. And so it's like, why are the accounting firms the only ones that are getting this? Well, they're the numbers crunchers, mm-hmm. and they get it. They see that the bottom line can, you know, you can make a profit and also offer these benefits to your employees. So that's interesting to bear in mind. And Southwest Creations is right here in Albuquerque, and you're a model for how to do this.
Yep.
So that's good to know.
I think this is Egypt. And just, again, speaking from my own sort of sharing my own story, I think, like, as a single mom, there's nothing more stressful and something that would distract you more than anything is when you know that your kid might not be in a place that they're safe, or if they're, you know, you have an older sibling taking care of them, that for the most part, you know, oh, you're just constantly all day worried about that and not able to focus and be as productive as you could. So I know that, you know, I can say for myself how much at ease I am when I'm able to know that my kid's in a safe, reliable place, that that I can know how much that improves my work.
This is Kelsey. I want to pick up on something Adrian said earlier, too, and talk about that welfare mom stigma and do a little myth busting in terms of who gets public assistance in New Mexico. So first of all, we right now have 550,000 people on Medicaid. And after health reform goes into effect in 2014, it's going to go to 750,000. And another 200,000 are going to qualify for help in the form of tax credits and subsidies to buy health insurance. And that's not even talking about all the people who get health insurance through their employer, which is heavily subsidized by the government. So we are all beneficiaries of public assistance. In one way or another, we send our kids to public schools, we drive on public roads, we use bridges. I mean, this myth that people are making it on their own and people who can't do that are different from us somehow really needs to go away. Because particularly in New Mexico, we all rely on these public assistance systems. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, you know, that's how good government and good community operates. It supports a community and lets people be productive and contribute.
I want to pick up on that a little bit, too, as well, because if we're talking about, you know, dependence on government subsidies or low-income people and trying to kind of move people out of poverty in our state, I think education is really key to that. And New Mexico, we battle every year with Mississippi for the lowest graduation rates. And I think, you know, there's a lot of challenges around access to education in New Mexico, but one of them in particular is parent engagement. We've seen study after study shows that if parents are able to engage in their children's education in a variety of ways, whether it be to go to that parent-teacher conference or go deal with some type of conflict that's happening, those children are going to do better on test scores. Those children are going to do better in terms of their graduation and just their overall performance. And in New Mexico, you know, one of the things that kind of contributes to that, the poverty kind of breeds more poverty, is we have hourly wage employees who don't have the flexibility to engage with their children in the classroom. And so if my kid is in a fight or if my kid is having an issue with their teacher, you know, I work at an hourly wage job, I think, you know, my child is going to be responsible for figuring that out by themselves. And so no wonder we're having the outcomes in education that we're having. And so I think if we really are looking at some solutions, there are 14 states right now that provide some type of parent engagement leave where parents can actually leave their job and know that their job is going to be there when they get back and go deal with some of these issues in kind of a structured way. That's something that we might want to look to because, again, if you're not necessarily in the business of caring about women and families and the health of women and families, but you do want an educated workforce, you do want improvements in our economy, we really need to look at how our education system and the systems around that are serving our children.
That's a good example of employers offering different kinds of flexibility and workplace policies that support families. Another one that we haven't talked about is healthcare and health insurance. So a lot of people are talking about paid sick time. You know, people don't have time to go to the doctor. They lose wages if they take off time or they lose their job. Some people don't have healthcare benefits. Kelsey, I know you've done a lot of work on health insurance and healthcare reform. Do you want to address that?
Yeah, sure. So at the center, we've done a lot of work around the implementation of health reform in New Mexico, and particularly getting ready for the big pieces of health reform that are going to come into into play in January 2014, depending on what the Supreme Court decides in the next couple of weeks. And I think it's worth noting what's at stake for New Mexico here. So New Mexico has the second highest rate of uninsurance in the nation. We're actually behind Texas, not Mississippi, in this particular statistic. And so 1 in 4 adults in New Mexico doesn't have health insurance, and 1 in 6 kids doesn't have health insurance in New Mexico. So we are talking about a large group of people, hundreds of thousands, and about 400,000 of them stand to gain access to health coverage after health reform goes into effect if we do a good job implementing it. So a big chunk of those folks are going to be people who are newly eligible for Medicaid. Right now, a lot of parents cannot get Medicaid, even though they're quite low income, because we have very strict income rules for non-disabled, non-elderly adults. And the health reform law is going to make a lot more adults, a lot more parents, a lot more moms eligible for Medicaid. And then also there is going to be some assistance to help people buy private insurance. And if the Supreme Court strikes down part or all of this law, it's a big loss for New Mexico in particular, because we have so many people without access to health coverage here, which really does play a huge role in linking people up to health care.
Okay, and you're tuned into Women's Health Today. We've been speaking with Jessica Aranda, Adrienne Barboa, and Kelsey Heilman here about what makes families healthy and able to thrive in New Mexico. We're almost out of time, but I wanted to ask you if you have any last thoughts about what kinds of partners we need to engage in order to address or implement some of the solutions that you talked about today. We've covered education, we've covered employment, childcare, healthcare, workplace benefits. There's a lot of information here. And so who do we want to engage to move some of this forward?
So thank you, Giovanna, for this time. Whether it's parental leave or healthcare or the numerous things we've talked about, New Mexico is one of the poorest states, and that basis of poverty and the ways that our families are stigmatized and left sort of to defend themselves from the margins really has to change. And a lot of the ways that we see that working is engaging with folks that are doing work on the ground, really engaging in a civic engagement. So sharing stories, again, bringing back that humanity of these are our families, these are our children, our mothers, our sisters. How do we lift their voices in the political debate to make policies that will change the ways that the money hits the ground, right? So with Strong Families New Mexico, we're really pushing some civic engagement work this year, hoping families can vote for us and look at policies that would change this, and that families and voters would come out in strong numbers to support that.
I want to thank you all for being with us this morning. That's all we have time for today. For more information and links, you can go to prx.org or collectiveactionstrategies.com. This has been Women's Health Today. Women's Health Today is produced at the studios at KUNM in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Our engineer today was Roman Garcia. Theme music composed and performed by Paul Presley. You can find a podcast of the show at kunm.org. I'm Giovanna Rossi for Women's Health Today.